From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, we have an open line for you at 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, Zorba, some topics to talk over.
Yes, the anti-vaccine movement is coming back, has arrived in America. And what do I think about the anti-vaccine movement? I will comment.
I think I know, but...
I bet you do, Tom. Yeah. And then we're going to talk about the new handheld, the treatment for overdoses, and whether or not this should be available even over the counter by a doctor's prescription for people who undergo heroin overdose. It's an interesting moral, ethical issue that we have to attend to.
Okay. And our recipe.
Yes. Mushroom and gorgonzola turkey burgers. If you like burgers, if you like turkey, if you're looking for something new and interesting to put on the grill, this is something for you.
Coming up. Our number again, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, to the phones we go. A listener with us now in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited about your mushroom gorgonzola turkey burger. I love your recipes. They're so fun.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's very, very kind of you. Very kind of you.
My question is, during the Olympics, we had a lot of commercials on, and there was celebrity who could remain unnamed, or I'll tell you who he was. Anyway, he was hawking Omega XL Omega 3 oils that come from the green lipped mussel down in the pristine waters off of New Zealand, and I got a bottle of it. Well, when I took it into my naturopath, she said, don't take that one, take krill oil instead. So I'd like to get your, she likes the krill oil because it has xanthan in it, and so I'd like to get your take on that.
Sure. When we look at, first of all, we have to look at where all of this comes from. It comes from the reality that we know that people along the Mediterranean Sea have fewer heart attacks and strokes. Mm-hmm. And so research is, when we look at the Mediterranean diet, which is beyond a doubt the best diet you can have, no doubt about it, hands down, 30% fewer heart attacks, 30% fewer strokes, you then analyze what's going on there. Well, they do a number of things. First of all, they sit down and eat, not in their car. Mm-hmm. Very important. That's a very important part of the diet that often gets, you know, put to the side is how do they eat? They're by the Mediterranean Sea. They're enjoying a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. Tom is smiling now from ear to ear because he can picture the whole thing.
Sure.
But they eat. They have fruits and vegetables. They're plentiful. They tend to be fresh, of course. They tend not to be frozen. They're colorful. Color and micronutrients follow one another. And they have fish and seafood. They have their protein comes from the sea. And we know now that people have one to two servings of fish or seafood a week do better. So enter now industrializing this product. And when I say industrializing, I mean it. I like Michael Pollan's concept that we industrialize food and we industrialize some of the supplements we take. So we take krill, which we don't eat, and we put it in a pill. And then we take, like you said, Omega XL, and we put it in a pill. And then we say, this is good. And in fact, these have been shown to change triglycerides, HDL, the good cholesterol, and bad cholesterol in our diet. So in other words, we have these biochemical markers that make a change. But when we look at the heart attack and stroke rate, which is really what we care about, none of them fit the bill as much as seafood and fish.
Ah.
That's the most important thing. So from the mainstream cardiologists, nutritionists who are highfalutin doctors, and I don't mean that in a bad way at all, to naturopaths who are wonderful, wonderful at looking at things that we have to do in a more natural way. They all, I think, fall into the same category of giving us industrialized supplements. And I believed in industrialized supplements for years, and now I'm on the other side of that. I believe that the most organic organic way to eat is to eat things produced by Mother Nature. So in the end, I don't think the krill is superior to the Omega XL. I think they all fit into the same side of industrialized products. And it's just like back in the 60s when we went to the moon and drank Tang and we're thinking we were like the astronauts. Yeah. I mean, if you were back in the 60s, you know, Tang. I mean, you know, Tang is...
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, it's orange, right?
Yeah, orange, right. It's Kool-Aid by another name, but if the astronauts drank it, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the astronauts were the... We're the rock stars and the basketball stars of the age. But we believe that we can industrialize our food, and I don't think we can. So your naturopath may be right that krill is superior to Omega XL, but neither of them are right when it comes to what you should do, which is seafood and fish and colorful food.
Awesome.
I hope that helps.
Yes, it did help very much. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Ann Zorba, an Oklahoma City, Oklahoma listener, joins us. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
We've enjoyed taking the family to the mountains every year for ski vacation. So I've noticed over the last couple of years that every morning I've had the worst blurred vision until I get used to the altitude. So my question is, and I'm familiar with the altitude sickness, but is there anything that I can do to help my vision adjust to the altitude?
Oh, sure. That's I'm a skier, so I understand. Where do you go skiing? Where do you like to go?
Breckenridge. This year we've been to Winter Park.
Uh-huh. Breck is great. Breck is great. And by the way, Breckenridge is about as high as you can get in terms of skiing in Colorado. Do you stay in Breckenridge when you go there?
We do.
Okay. And then after day two or day three, you start to feel better? Is that it?
Well, the vision does not get better. So I've noticed even when we were there for three nights, the last night, woke up the next morning, and still the vision was just as bad as it was day one.
Just as bad. And, okay, a couple of other things. Have you ever taken any mountain sickness medicine? Diamox is the drug I'm thinking of.
I have not.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you drive there or you fly there?
Well, it's interesting. We flew there earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, got in late that night, mm-hmm. got up the next morning, and it was terrible.
Uh-huh.
We just a month later went back and drove, and even driving there, still the first morning that I woke up, I still noticed that vision was still bad.
Exactly. Well, this is a side effect of mountain sickness. I've got some very specific ideas that might work for you. First of all, one recommendation is Breckenridge, when you sleep, it's at about 10,000 feet. Idaho Springs, which is on the way, is a great little stop. It's at about 7,500, 8,000 feet, and I recommend you sleep there the first night. I sleep in Idaho Springs or Georgetown the first night, and that has made a major difference for me because I'm not quite as high, and I'm past a lot of the traffic. Do you go skiing with your kids? You have a family when you go skiing?
We do.
You have the
we
kids.
Do.
How old are your kids?
They're 17.
They're 17. Does that mean you have twins?
I do.
See, I guess
very good,
right.
Zora.
I guess right. I'm a doctor. I can understand those things, right? I can figure
I've
that.
I've got a boy and a girl, and we've enjoyed ski trips every year since they've been born. So.
They're wonderful. Yeah, everyone. And I have four kids. I skied with all my kids. The first night, stay lower. Idaho Springs, the Super 8 in Georgetown is great. It's cheap. It's inexpensive, as Tom knows. I like not to spend money when it comes to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have a better time. You get up early in the morning, grab the donuts in Idaho Springs. They're on the left-hand side. I love those donuts.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar donuts. And then you'll be a little bit better. You'll still have some mountain sickness, but the first night will make the big difference. And the second night, stay at the place. That's number one. Number two, there's a drug called Diamox. Now, it's an interesting drug. It's a diuretic called a carbonic anhydrase inhibitor. Big, long, fancy name.
Mm-hmm.
But Diamox changes the way we breathe and the pH of our bloodstream, and it helps with mountain sickness. Doesn't get rid of it. Helps with mountain sickness. It has one interesting side effect. When you have any bubbly beverage, it tastes bitter.
Hmm.
So the first time I took Diamox, I was sitting with my buds having a beer, and I said, have you tasted this beer? There's something wrong with it. And everyone said, no, it's right. And I had a few sips, and I said, this beer is awful, and threw it out, not knowing that the Diamox made my taste bitter. It's a very strange side effect. So bubbly beverages, Coke, Diamox, well, all strange, it tastes a little bitter. But I would try that out, and that may decrease it, but it won't get rid of it. That may decrease it, but it won't get rid of it. And the thing that actually is better is skiing at a different ski hill, but you know, Breckenridge is great, which is a little bit lower. If you were there for a week, it would improve, but 3 days is just about the beginning of the improvement of, you know, of your mountain sickness. So you may have to ski for 5 to 6 days, and that's going to add a lot of money to your family budget.
I like the idea of the Diamox. I think I'll give that a shot next time we go.
The Diamox, different. What we'll do is we'll put a link on our website, zorbapastor.org, as to the dosage that I would recommend and how I would recommend taking the Diamox. And try and consider sleeping lower that first night. That'll make a huge difference in how you feel the second day. Good
Excellent.
Luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your
Thank
call.
You. Appreciate the call. You said Breckenridge is about as high as you can get in Colorado.
Yeah, yeah. But with Summit
County. Maybe not anymore.
It's Summit. Very good, Tom. Very good.
1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, the anti-vaccine movement is growing in our country.
Yes. So, full disclosure, Bob Mendelsohn, who has passed away many years ago, was my mentor. And Tom, when you had Bob Mendelsohn on your phone, Tom had a morning show in the state.
That's a great
it
story.
It was a show, always had not controversial topics, but you never let anybody get away with anything. And what happened when you had Bob Mendelsohn, who was the Dr. King of the anti-immunization movement?
Well, we got calls. Tons of calls,
right,
backed up on the phone lines, one after the other, after the other, after the other. Dr. Mendelsohn, you're so right. Dr. Mendelsohn, we love you. Dr. Mendelsohn, you're taking on the medical profession. Way to go, Dr. Mendelsohn. Finally, I get a call about halfway. Is anybody ever going to criticize this? I get a call. I just want you to know that my father is a doctor, I think, at last. And I couldn't agree with you more. Total agreement. Everybody loved this guy.
That's right. Except
who's total anti-hospital,
that's right,
anti-doctor.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And who didn't like them? Who didn't like him?
Well, yeah. Well, the medical profession and the medical school at a certain university hated the fact that he was
called
on
called the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So they called me up and they said, would you go against this guy on the air? And I said, wait a minute, he's my mentor.
Yeah.
And I agree with some of the things he said. And he was a very important person in having women take charge of their birthing.
Yeah.
He was, but like a
and
lot
was,
of.
And he was right on with, you know, you can really get, you're taking a risk when you go on the hospital.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But like he kind of overdid
like
it.
Like all great thinkers, he had side effects. And his side effect was immunizations were bad. So I was kind of part of that. And now I'm on the complete other side. When I first started practice, I saw meningitis. I had probably somewhere between 8 and 10 cases of meningitis. Some children with meningitis today have learning disabilities because they develop meningitis. We have the meningitis vaccine. I am in full belief that it's useful. Pertussis, Wisconsin led the country last year in the pertussis outbreaks. Pertussis is the 100-day cough. It's terrible when you get it. Kids can die from it. It's an awful disease.
And
measles, I had measles as a kid. You can get measles, meningitis.
That was supposed to be extinct.
Well, it could all be extinct. The reality is childhood immunization saves lives and has made a huge dent worldwide. Now, polio, we all agree, was bad. Well, we gave the oral polio vaccine because it was better. But then we switched about 10 years ago because 1 out of 1 million cases of the Sabin vaccine developed polio, and we were actually causing 4 to 5 polio cases in this country every year. We went back to the Salk vaccine because it's very effective. Yeah. Not quite as effective, but we don't see polio. So there have been changes.
Well,
so,
now, why is the anti-vaccine
you know,
movement growing?
I think it's part of the back-to-earth organic movement. We should just let Mother Nature come in and do her thing.
Yeah.
Well, Mother Nature had smallpox if she did her thing. Mother Nature has chickenpox. Mother Nature has measles and mumps. German measles. Remember German measles. If you're a woman and then you get rubella with a child. The child becomes deaf and then loses IQ points with rubella. So if we had rubella again, which was benign, or very benign for children, but not benign for a pregnant mother, it would be there. I am totally on the side that immunizations are good, and I believe that the people in charge of the anti-immunization movement are fanatics, and I don't think that's good. And we're going to get pushback from this. But one more thing.
People are afraid of immunizations.
Of course. It's a shot. If we gave a pill, I don't think people would be as afraid. But one more thing. The guy who said that measles vaccine caused autism published a study that has been retracted from the journal Lancet, which is just an important journal like the New England Journal of Medicine. That guy is a quack. That guy has been defrocked from the medical establishment. But that guy lives on. He makes money from lectures that he does around the world. People invite him to speak. They put him up at the Ritz. They fed him with honors. They say, you are our God. And the reality is this guy is a quack, is a naysayer, and he is one of the leaders in the anti-immunization vaccine movement. I think people should see one case of meningitis, and then they would change their minds.
Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take a listener question from Gwen in Montana. She writes, Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, I cleaned out my cupboards and came up with a number of old prescription drugs that I want to throw away. I live in a rural area at the headwaters for drinking water downstream, where there is a large predominance of wildlife. My pharmacist recommended mixing the old drugs with cat litter or old coffee grounds. This is also what it says on the FDA website. It seems that these guidelines are really only concerned with people retrieving these drugs and does not take into consideration that they could easily end up affecting wildlife, getting in the water system, etc. Isn't there a better way to take care of these old drugs?
Who's going to put their drugs in kitty litter? I mean, and then do you find a cat to pee on the drugs and then you get rid of them?
Apparently the FDA says you should.
Well, the FDA knows everything, right? They know everything. I think she's right. I think they're actually looking to make sure nobody reuses them. But frankly, if you've got a blood pressure pill, that's not where a dumpster diver is going to go pick something up. This is a major problem because you're right. You don't want them in the drinking supply. Obviously, she's not going to the river and dump them in there. And one recommendation is just throw them in the garbage. On the other hand, now we find that some of these drugs leach into the landfill. Recommendation, call your hospital. Look on your state website. There are ways that you can actually bring them. That we don't have a good system in America involved. They often have once a month or once a year they'll take used drugs. But the best recommendation I have is to find a healthcare professional who can deal with it. Clearly, it's not your pharmacist. And for the most part, they're not that interested. But hospitals do this.
Well, do what? Well,
they will call the local hospital. They will take the drugs in. They often will have a drug dispensing time where you can bring them in there. And then they will dispose of them the right way. And frankly, I don't know what the right way is. I haven't looked at the kitty litter website on the FDA. My guess is you'll find one of those kitty litter YouTube videos that will be somewhere on the YouTube site. But call your hospital and ask your hospital pharmacist how to dispose of it. They should have the right information.
Have a question you'd like to dump on Zorba? Post it to our Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up next. You want to stay with us for that. More of your calls, of course. Some more interesting information, another topic to talk about in our medical MythBuster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 1-800-462-7413. We have callers waiting, but an open line for you at 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we get back to our calls, our recipe for mushroom and gorgonzola turkey burgers.
Now, do you like burgers?
I like burgers, yeah.
Yeah, you like burgers.
I eat fewer of them than I used to, but yeah, I like burgers.
Yeah, what does fewer mean?
Means maybe one every week or two.
Oh, really? You used to eat them much more commonly.
I know.
What happened?
I decided they weren't the healthiest thing in the world to eat every day.
So. Oh, my goodness. You're changing your habits. You know, that makes me feel really good. That means,
I credit you with this. Sitting here every week. Hearing,
all right.
Hearing you.
All right. Okay. Enough already. All right. Enough already.
Yeah.
But anyway, turkey, if it's lean turkey, is a white meat, so it has less cholesterol. It'll affect your – it's better than red meat in terms of the fat that there. But it's important that it be lean because turkey, ground turkey, can be dark meat or white meat.
Mm-hmm.
And white meat ground is better than dark meat. And the lean stuff means it's going to be a mixture. And if it doesn't say lean, don't buy it because that means it's dark meat, which, by the way, is cheaper than white meat. So it's and mushrooms are great. I love shrooms, as my kids would call them.
Shrooms,
that's what they say. Yeah. Although I think shrooms have another connotation, too, that is shrooms, you know, the shroom. Don't you think? No, maybe not.
I don't know.
I don't know. You know, it's not of my culture. And gorgonzola I happen to like as a cheese.
Yep.
So start out with two slices of whole wheat bread. Remove the crust and tear it into pieces.
Two slices whole wheat bread, crust removed, torn into pieces.
8 ounces of mushrooms. White mushrooms are fine, and it wouldn't make a difference what kind of mushroom you use. The whites are the most common.
8 ounces, mushrooms cleaned.
3 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil.
3 little tea extra virgin olive oil.
A finely chopped onion, one medium.
Finely chopped onion.
A couple of cloves of garlic that are minced.
2 cloves minced garlic.
1 pound of lean ground turkey.
1 pound lean ground turkey.
1 large egg lightly beaten.
A large egg, lightly beaten.
1/2 cup of crumbled gorgonzola cheese.
1/2 cup crumbled gorgonzola cheese.
3 tablespoonfuls of chopped fresh dill.
3 big tea chopped fresh dill.
And if you can't get the chopped fresh dill, you can buy them in a tube. And you probably use 1/2 teaspoon of that. It's in a it's in a tube concoction.
Mm-hmm.
1 1/2 tablespoonfuls of coarse-grained mustard.
1 1/2 big tea coarse-grained mustard.
1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 a little tea salt.
1/4 teaspoon of fresh ground black pepper.
1/4 little tea fresh ground black pepper.
And, of course, maybe 6 whole wheat buns.
6 whole wheat buns.
That's
Can
right.
I ask a question about that before
you tell us
how to put this together?
Please ask any question you want
people,
to.
A lot of people say that whole wheat isn't what whole wheat used to be. It used to be good for us. It isn't anymore because of the way we grow our wheat now. And you don't get those long shoots of wheat. And the good part of whole wheat isn't good anymore.
Well, I think it's a function of, first of all, there's whole wheat buns and whole wheat buns. So you can't make bread rise. I bake bread.
Mm-hmm.
So if I make whole wheat bread, it's 1 cup of whole wheat and 2 cups of white flour. And otherwise it doesn't rise. If I use totally whole wheat flour, it's really dense.
Okay.
And so there'll be buns that are whole wheat that have hardly any whole wheat in them, first of all.
Yeah.
And they're mostly white and they're doing whole wheat as a sale product. So you've got to kind of look at the amount of fiber in there. And if you go in your shop, if it's a non-bakery and it's manufactured, it'll tell you how much whole wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your question of whether or not we're getting it because we're using modified wheat, I don't know really if that's the case. I know fiber is fiber and I haven't seen any scientific literature to show that that it's not
what it is. Sorry for the distraction.
Oh, please. You know, Tom, a distraction, it's my middle name, distraction. I get distracted very easily. Place the bread, that whole wheat breadcrumbs, crust removed, into a food processor, and you're going to make fine breadcrumbs from it. That's the idea. You could use them, but take the 2 slices of whole wheat bread, put them in a food processor, make them into crumbs, transfer to a large barrel, pulse the mushrooms until they're finely chopped, then heat 2 teaspoons of oil in a large nonstick skillet over medium heat. Add onions, garlic, and mushrooms. Stir occasionally until they're tender and the liquid has evaporated. It's about 10 minutes. Add the breadcrumbs. Let them cool about 15 to 20 minutes. Then preheat your grill. You, of course, can do this on the stove or in the broiler. I love using the grill even in the middle of winter. Add the ground turkey, egg, gorgonzola, cheese, dill mustard, salt, and pepper to the mushroom mixture. So mix everything else together. mix it well with a potato masher, or do it as I do it with my hands, and then form the mixture into six nice thick patty using about a half a cup for each one. Oil the grill rack, brush the patties with a teaspoon of oil because they're low fat. Grill until they're no longer pink, about 5 minutes on each side, or do what I do. I use a meat thermometer because my wife likes to make sure they're cooked. Mm-hmm. Very important, you're using poultry. It's got to be to 165 degrees because of the salmonella risk. Split the buns, toast them on the grill, put them together, garnish with lettuce and tomato, and you've got a wonderful mushroom and gorgonzola turkey burger.
And if I wasn't able to write all of this down, how could I find out what this recipe is?
Well, you'd have to have a secretary write it down for you. That you would have to do. Are there secretaries who still take shorthand? No! Go to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can look at that recipe, other recipes, see photos of Tom, photos of me. That's zorbapastor.org. And remember, you can find us on Facebook, and I occasionally tweet.
800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba. Let's see if we can help a listener in Denver, Colorado. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. Zorba, as you know, I'm calling from Denver at altitude, and that's prompting a question, amongst other reasons. We've always heard about smoking, you know, causing damage to the coronary and how it affects our heart and the increased heart attack percentages and all of that. But I also want to know, you know, after many, many years of abuse due to smoking, as well as some other, shall we say, alkaloids and all the adulterants therein, I know I've done some damage to my lungs. Now, I'm wondering, what is the possibility of my lungs regenerating? What can I do to help them regenerate, rejuvenate, and increase capacity? Because at altitude, I do hike, I do trail run, and you can feel it here.
Oh, sure.
And I'm kind of wondering if there's anything that I can do to help my lungs.
Yeah. So first of all, how much did you, are you still smoking?
No, I stopped actually 11 years ago.
Good. Well, congratulations. As a former smoker, I stopped back in 69, but I smoked for 4 years. How many years did you smoke for?
Between 20 and 25 years.
Pack a day, two packs a day?
Pack a day.
Okay, so 20-year pack-a-day smoker. So let me explain a little bit about your lungs and what it is. And you quit 11 years ago. So the risk of lung cancer, and most smokers do not get lung cancer. It's only maybe 20%, 15 or 20%. The risk of lung cancer disappears over time. And you approach a normal risk at about, the last data I looked at that was good, is about 20 years. So you're still at a higher risk for lung cancer. It's been 11 years. You're still at a higher risk than the, you know, anyone walking down the street who's a non-smoker. But at about 20 years, your risk is about the same as they have. So that's good. Risk, by the way, of cancer is higher when you live in the mountains because of radiation. It's just sort of the nature of that. Now, from a heart attack, from a stroke point of view, your risk decreases in about 10 years. Your heart attack significantly decreases. Does it return to normal? Probably. Possibly it's in that range, hard to quantitate, but you've reduced that dramatically. Now, what about the chronic lung disease risk, COPD, which is chronic bronchitis and emphysema? Well, part of that is damage that will not come back. What happens is our lungs are a honeycomb. They look just like a honeycomb, and we destroy the alveoli, which are these little honeycombs in there. If you look at the surface area of your lungs when you're 18 years old, it's the surface area of a 9x12 rug. Every time you take a deep breath in, you've got a 9x12 rug surface area, and you've got a blood that's basically, you know, that is on that 9x12 rug, and you've got easy diffusion of oxygen in and carbon dioxide out. And you've destroyed some of that, you know, because you smoke for 20, 25 years. That will never come back. Never, ever, ever. Mm. And your risk of having chronic bronchitis when you're older, and significant chronic bronchitis, never disappears. It lessens, but it never goes down to zero. However, there are things you can do, and it's not that you'll regenerate the parts of your lung that you've lost, but there are things that you can do to make it better. And generally what we found is overall fitness, cardiovascular fitness. Hitting the gym 20 to 30 minutes, 3 to 4 days a week, huge difference, because what you're going to do is increase the reserve in the lung tissue you have.
That's exactly what I was hoping to hear, because as I mentioned, I do trail run here at altitude.
Exactly. Exactly. So you're not going to regenerate anything, but you're going to take what you have and make it the max. And that turns out to be incredibly important. In other words, right weight, making sure you eat right, cardiovascular fitness, but it's really aerobic exercise that you want to hit. And that's key. That's what you can do. And you can maximize what you have. And the studies have shown beyond a shadow of a doubt that doing the road stuff you're doing is going to make a big difference in your life.
Fantastic. This is exactly what I was hoping to find out.
Good, good. Keep up the good work, and congratulations on your quitting.
Thank you, Zorba. Thank you very much. And congratulations on your show. It's very, very helpful. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. Good help from the good doc. 800-462-7413, toll free. And a Helena, Montana caller with us now. Hi.
Gentlemen, my bride and I are big fans of your program, and also want to thank you for turning us on to the Mediterranean diet. We really like it.
Excellent.
Well, thank you. Thank
you. And I have a question about olive oils. We use mostly olive oils in our cooking, and we're wondering what factors contribute to the different types of olive oils, and do these factors have any bearing on the health benefits of olive oil?
Well, it's a great question to ask, because studies have shown, interestingly, that once you begin to heat the olive oil, that you lose some of the benefits. Some studies show that. So, you know, raw olive oil that we use on salads that we put in afterwards has a huge benefit in terms of the ability to really reduce our heart attack risk and stroke. But I'm still of the belief that heating and cooking with olive oil is still the best oil to use. Olive oil, canola oil is a close second. And the reason is I always go back to the Mediterranean diet. Olive oil is the oil of choice for cooking all along the Mediterranean Sea. It's the choice for anything that they use when they're going to use in their salads. So when you heat it up, you lose some of the benefits, you lose some of the taste, but you still get some of the benefit, and it's still better than using corn oil, cottonseed oil, and the other oils that people recommend. When I was young, my mom used Crisco, and Crisco is about as fat-laden as you can be. So you said your bride, how long have you been married?
24 years.
I love it, and you still call her your bride. That is a term of endearment and love. I love it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Also, we've been hearing a lot about coconut oils lately, and we're wondering how they compare to olive oil.
Well, you know, it's an interesting issue, because about 10 years ago, there were a number of studies that showed, which I still think are important, that coconut oil has trans fats, and that it's actually worse for you than any other oil that's on the market. Well, following that information, we started realizing that trans fats were in solids in margarine. So here it was, we're recommending margarine over coconut oil, and it turned out that stick margarine, not oil margarine, but stick margarine, was probably the same as coconut oil. Enter then the industry that produces baked goods, where they use trans fats because it would end up making your Twinkie last for 150 years without going bad. So going back to the original question, I think coconut oil has a place, but it's incomparable to olive oil, which is the king of oils. And that's exactly what I would stick with.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking the time to answer my question.
Mm-hmm. A pleasure. And thanks for listening to the show.
We appreciate the call. And Zorba, this is sort of turning into the Mediterranean diet hour. We have an email now, a food-related...
Where's the music? Where's the glass of wine?
Right, right.
And where's the Mediterranean Sea? It may be the Mediterranean diet all, but we don't even have a virtual Mediterranean. There are no pictures in the studio of anything on the Mediterranean Sea.
You don't want to describe what's in the studio surrounding us right now.
No, I don't.
I don't either. This one is a question from Marcy in Buffalo, New York, who writes, "Hello, Dr. Pastor. I enjoyed reading your article in the Buffalo News regarding the Mediterranean diet, but I have a question. What about breads and pasta? They played a huge part in our diet growing up, and all of my ancestors are from Italy, so I know they too grew up eating these foods. What are your thoughts on this?"
Oh, I think breads and pasta absolutely have a place. They're part of the Mediterranean diet. I mean, bread and pasta are part of it, along with fruits and vegetables and a variety of foods. So they play a role. I love Buffalo. I've gone to Buffalo numerous times. I've lectured there. They produced my TV show. When I was there with my agent, Carl, who was wonderful, who has since passed away, I said, I want to go to a real Buffalo Italian place. And so we went in there, and I decided that I would get the 3-in-1 dish because I happen to love different pastas. And the 3-in-1 was a serving of lasagna, there was some spaghetti, and there was some ravioli. And when I looked at the dish that came to me, and I calculated the number of calories on the dish, I thought it was about 2,500 calories. The 3-in-1 was basically a full serving of lasagna, a full serving of ravioli, and a full serving of spaghetti. Go back to Italy when the 3-in-1 dish is very, very common. Mm-hmm. It's basically one serving. It's a third and a third and a third. So pasta has a place as long as you eat the right amount.
Mm-hmm. Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org and find us on Facebook.
Some research to talk about. That's coming up next. Some more of your calls, too, in our Medical Mythbuster. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-462-7413. You'll find a line open now if you call. But before our next call, Zorba, handheld treatment for overdoses is approved.
Yeah, well, these are overdoses of narcotics, and it's very, very interesting. There's a drug called naloxone.
Uh-huh.
If you go to the emergency room and you're on an overdose and you give a shot, it reverses the effects of the opioid. And so, if we have opioids, we have hydrocodone, oxycodone, Percocet, yeah, Vicodin, you have an overdose, and there's 17,000 fatal overdoses every year in this country.
But now, what do we mean?
From heroin to prescription drugs. You give a shot of this.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It turns around.
I'm just worrying. What do we mean by handheld?
Well, this is a device that people can use who are not healthcare professionals. And it's a device that is similar to the automatic defibrillator. What will happen is you turn on the device and it tells you how to use it. It's basically like an adrenaline pen. You know, we talk about EpiPens for people who are allergic. This is a device that it'll turn it on. It'll say, put it on the skin, push the button, and it automatically injects it into the person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very good. So it'll reverse it. The real issue, we've got a number of issues here. You know, this is often a friend of somebody who is with them when they're overdosing on a drug. Those are the people who are going to use it. Or someone who's in the house and all of a sudden they know they're with a junkie or somebody who's taking an overdose of drug. It doesn't give them harm if they give it incorrectly. They won't give it incorrectly because the device has been basically is a self-injecting device.
It sounds great, but I'm wondering how many people are really going to have access to this, knowing ahead of time that they may need to use.
Well, think about it. You're a junkie. You live with a junkie. You want to get this from your doctor because the person's a junkie. You've got some moral ethical issues here. You say, well, wait a minute. You shouldn't be taking these opioid drugs, the doctor may say. But yeah, they are taking them. We should have this at home in case they die because there are 17,000 deaths a year. And the pushback from some people say, well, you're not doing enough to prevent opioids from being used. I prescribe opioids to people with chronic pain. I've studied opioids, full disclosure. I've talked about opioids. The reality is they have been overused and we have overprescribed them. Many of our doctors, me included, have prescribed too much over the years.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a really good thing.
Oh, it's a very good thing. And the fact is, narcotic drugs are important for people with chronic pain. They're important for people to use. Unfortunately, they get abused. Many young people abuse them and they die unnecessarily. This new drug, which is an injectable drug called Aviso, is something that should be widespread, should be available to anyone who wants them because it may prevent an overdose for someone you love. It's a major step forward.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And we go back to the phones now, Zorba, welcoming a listener in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I am a longtime listener. Love your show. My situation, I love to cook. I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, and my husband has an issue with garlic, and I cook with garlic almost daily, and I have a hard time omitting garlic from a recipe. He gets a reaction. His stomach hurts. He gets sort of an antacid issue, not all the time, but some of the time, and I'm wondering what I can do perhaps to the garlic, or is there something other than Tums to take so he can enjoy the food and...
You mean so you can enjoy the food and he can enjoy the food?
Exactly. It's selfish.
I just want to get this straight. If he never cooked with garlic again, he would be fine. But if he wants to live with you, then garlic is on the menu tonight.
That is so true. So I've come to terms and called you to say, what can I do?
Right, that's right, because your life is suffering. Your quality of life is going down.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Julia Child once said, I can't imagine a cuisine without garlic. I mean, and she's one of my mentors.
Yeah.
She's a mentor. Okay, a couple of recommendations. Has he tried Zantac?
You know, he has never done prescription anything to do with
It's over the counter without a prescription. It's a great drug.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So one thing to do, because garlic produces acid in the stomach, is you take Zantac. It works for about 12 hours, so you don't take it like just before you're eating something with garlic. You can take it during the day. First thing I would try is Zantac. So, honey, we're having spaghetti tonight, and anytime within 6 to 8 hours, takes a Zantac, or, you know, when you're feeding him breakfast or lunch or something, here's your Zantac, dear. We're having garlic tonight. Does he like the taste of garlic, by the way?
Loves it.
Okay. Yeah. So we've got motivation on his side. It's not like Tom with tofu. Honey, we're having tofu tonight.
No.
I'm going to take.
No.
First thing I would try is Zantac. Antacids might work, but Zantac will work
Zantac.
Better. If that fails, I would try Zantac with an antacid. That's what I would try. If that fails, I would try Prilosec over the counter without a prescription, 20 milligrams. On an empty stomach. By the way, the Zantac dose I would use would be the maximal dose available, which is 150 milligrams. That'll probably do it. That'll do it most of the time. If not, I would try something interesting, which is I would either try Lactaid or Beano. Now, these are enzymes that are used to lactate is used to digest milk, and Beano is an enzyme that's used to digest beans so we don't pass gas as much. And sometimes those enzymes cross over to other enzymes that we have. And I would try Beano or Lactaid and see what that would do, just see if those enzymes would help. But I bet the Zantac will do it. Let me know. And we have listeners across the country who I bet are going to flood our email box with recommendations on how to eat garlic effectively without having a bad stomach.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Hope your marriage survives this.
It will. Thanks a lot.
We appreciate the call. And Zorba, in my defense, what would you say if Penny said, we're having tofu tonight?
I would say, how are you making it, honey? That's what I would say. How are you making it, honey? That's what I would say.
Time now, Zorba, for our myth-busting time. Today's medical myth-buster comes to us from Pearl, who's listening in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. She writes, Dear Tom and Zorba, I've had terrible spring allergies for 10-plus years now. A friend told me to buy local honey and eat a teaspoon of it every morning. So, since I've started doing this a few years ago, I've noticed my spring allergy symptoms have diminished greatly and are now much more manageable. People say that eating local honey exposes your body to high doses of allergens in your area, which desensitizes your system to them. So, I gotta ask, Doc, is this true?
Perhaps. It's an old folk remedy, been around for a long time. It indeed may help. So some people say it really makes a difference. Now, allergies come and go. And as you get older, your allergies actually get better. I used to have terrible spring allergies. Now I have mild spring allergies. It's one of the things because our body is not as robust in producing IgE, which is one of the chemicals our body produces with allergies. I would try it, see if it works. I would try it as a supplement, or I would try it just with it, and I think it's something that deserves research.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. And a listener now, Zorba, in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. How are you guys?
Fine. How can we help?
My question is a little broad, but here it is. I'm trying to gain weight, and I'm trying to do it the healthiest way possible. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give a little background. I'm 19 years old. I weigh 145 pounds. You know, I'm not trying to be the next Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I just want to gain like 20 to 25 pounds, and I just really don't know how to go about it because I've been doing some research on how to gain weight, and what I've been finding is kind of weird. It's kind of confusing. People are telling me to take supplements and HGH, which is human growth hormone. Mm-hmm. And I'm confused on what to take and if I should even take anything. And, you know, I'm really active. I have a pretty high metabolism. And, you know, it's just really hard to find how to gain weight because everyone's trying to lose weight. You know, nobody's trying to gain weight.
Right. How tall are you?
I'm about 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. And what was your weight?
145.
Yeah, that's me, except you're a couple of years younger than I am.
Yeah.
That's right.
But I, all my life I've been skinny, and even at my age, I'm still skinny, but it doesn't bother me anymore. I guess because when you're younger, that tends to be more of a problem, I think.
Right, right. Yeah, all my buddies, like, I feel like I'm the most active person in my group of friends. Uh-huh. All my friends, you know, they don't exercise as much as me, but yet they weigh, you know, more than I do, but they're still skinny. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're 170 pounds, uh-huh, but they just don't do as much exercise as I do. And I'm trying, you know, I've been eating super healthy. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I feel awesome. I feel great every day. Uh-huh. And I've been working out for about a year, but I've been noticing, I'm like, huh, I haven't gained a pound since I was a junior in high school.
Right, so right. Yeah, tell me about your mom and dad. Who's thin?
My dad is very thin.
Your dad is very thin.
And my mom is pretty thin, you know, but so I feel like I get it from my dad.
Yeah, and it's a genetic issue. Yeah. That's very much obesity. Some obesity is genetic, but that's often behavioral. But thinness is definitely a genetic issue. And about 5 to 10% of the population wants to gain weight. I mean, you're not alone, but you're in the minority, is what it is. And as you said, you've got a high metabolism, you exercise, so you're burning calories. So the question is, what should you do? First of all, stay away from human growth hormone, 100%. Do not have anything. And in fact, you actually can't get human growth hormone, the real stuff, without spending $10,000 to $20,000 a year. It's not good. It's junk. It's garbage. And the stuff that they say promotes human growth hormone doesn't really do it. So I would stay away from all of that. Now, many of the food supplements are actually soy protein. So if you look at the bodybuilding supplements that you can buy at expensive places like GHC and inexpensive places, you know, like Sam's Club and Costco, these are basically supplements that are soy protein, and they're okay to take. They're all right. Okay. That protein is definitely okay. Adding soy protein to your diet is okay. Eating lean meats are okay. You may or may not gain weight, but you'll eat in a healthy way.
Right.
If you want to gain weight, you have to increase the calories somewhere. So, you know, oil, a tablespoonful of oil is 100 calories. A tablespoonful of sugar is 45 calories. So the reason why we are overweight in this country is because we tend to eat a lot of fast food, which has a lot of oil in it. Not healthy. Not what you want to do. So first of all, you're never going to be really fat. You know that.
Right.
It's never going to happen. Your mom doesn't have it. Your dad doesn't have it. And you don't want to be that way. And what I would do is I would do a two-pronged approach. First of all, a soy supplement, which is a plant-based supplement, is safe. It'll add calories and protein. And you might gain 5 to 10 pounds from that. The second thing is realizing you're only going to gain 5 to 10 pounds. You're active. you exercise, you feel great. And so being comfortable in your body is also a very important thing. And that's kind of the other, that's kind of the other side of it. I bet you can gain 10 pounds with supplements if you work on it and add the calories, but you have to realize you're not going to be 185 or 190 probably, because that's just not the way your body is designed.
Wow, cool. Wow, that's a lot of great information.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Good luck. Let us know what happens.
Yeah,
definitely. Give us a call in a few months. Let us know what happens. We'd love a follow-up.
Okay, yeah, I definitely will. Thank you guys so much.
Sure, we appreciate the call. Thank you. And before we head out, Zorba, it's time again to hear from your favorite nitpickers, the Grammar Police.
We need music with the Grammar Police.
Well, this one, you won't mind this one. Okay. This week's pronunciation amendment comes to us from Sue of Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. She writes, "Dear Zorba, you asked for opinions on the pronunciation of tinnitus/tinnitus. As a medical transcriptionist of 32 years, it has been my experience that all doctors practicing in my region pronounce it with the short I as in tinnitus. But the proper pronunciation is the long I as in tinnitus. However, most transcriptionists also prefer the short I pronunciation, because when the word is pronounced with the long I, we have to pause and re-listen to make sure of what we are hearing, since it is rarely used. So, there you go."
There it is, the correct pronunciation from the medical transcriptionist, and I would call them authoritative. That's exactly it. But still, long I or short I, what shall I do? What shall I do?
Well, she says the correct is tinnitus.
That's right. However, people will understand what you're talking about if you say tinnitus. That's right. It's like my wife, Penny, who always say, "Well, you don't say whom enough. You're saying who when it should be whom." And I think, you know, whom is like grammatically correct, but we don't use it very much. So I will pay attention and try to remember it, but don't bank on it.
We're going to hear from the Grammar Police on who whom now. If you'd like to enlist in the mighty Grammar Police force, send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or find us on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7444. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444, ESCRA program number 0419Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.